Back. How's everyone doing today?
Doing good. How are you doing, Jamal?
I'm good. Let's knock these introductions out of the way, good sir. He yells, "Let the good times roll," as he gacks three rails of cocaine. It's Mr. Rob Fortune.
Thank you for that introduction. And now I'd like to introduce this man. He will turn your face to anal blaster. It's Jomo.
Yes. Yes. Yes, absolutely. I agree with that. You know, what is the method of proving love? Can anyone tell me what is the method of proving someone loves you?
Is it eating ass?
Is it cum?
To say eating ass.
I feel like the answer is cum. Okay. The answer is always cum.
Really, it's doing anal, blowing a load inside the asshole, farting it out onto a dish, and then drinking that. That's love.
Yeah, that's love. Yeah.
Okay.
That's true love.
Yeah. All right.
If the internet has taught me anything, it's taught me that that is true love.
Yes. Yes.
Love it. Love it. I'm a piece of shit. All right. He calls his dick the Great Curve. It's Mr. Jack Falcon.
Hello, everybody. Nice to be back. Nice to talk about music.
Wow.
So, what's everyone up to? What's everyone been up to?
I've been doing a lot more Japanese research, man. Just I wish I could go live there again, but we'll see.
Talking about watching Bukkake videos.
Oh yeah, yeah, yes, yes, yeah. Bukkake tsunami.
When you say teenage, how old are we talking?
Jesus Christ, we're towing the line. We're towing the line on inappropriate and inappropriate. So,
why do you want? Oh, what's up?
R. Kelly was a before and after for me. I'm never the same after that episode.
Did you watch the video where he peed? No.
No.
No, that shit was out, bro. And this one guy in high school was trying to get me to watch. I was like, no, I'm good. I don't want to see this young kid fucking poor girl getting pissed off by a fucking sexual deviant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't need that.
No, thanks.
Regular pee-pee's okay. With consenting adults, but
yeah. I'm drawing the line at waterworks, bro. I don't think I'm crossing that line.
I draw the line at poop.
Anything. Poop. Well, really? Okay. Yeah. So you'll get the golden shower. That's fine.
For no, you. No. I don't like partaking in stuff like that. But I don't mind. You ever seen midget? It's like watching midget porn. You know, you're not jerking to it. You're just watching it and be like, ooh, a bitch dirty.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense.
Little people need to have sex too.
Yeah. Everyone needs the bone, bro.
Yeah, you know, midgets need love too, you know?
Of course, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
All right.
Have we getting started?
Yeah, sure. We're listening to four classic rock bands today. Let me get the wheel up. Hang on a second.
This episode is brought to you by meatspin.com. Meatspin.com.
Go watch to 2,000 views and you will get a $10 gift card in the mail anonymously from Amazon. Yes. So bands we're looking at today, The Cure, The Cars, The Police, and Talking Heads. I thought these were all the bands, but it's not the Talking Heads. It's just Talking Heads. So I fucked that up as usual.
Because you're retarded.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So yeah, I'm going to spin the wheel and then we'll just start there.
Sounds good.
I'm fighting for my life.
I can't let that go. I can't let it go.
It's so good.
I'm sorry. Oh god.
Yeah, no, that's fine. All right, hang on. Let me grab the artwork. It landed on Talking Heads.
Very good.
Oh, great.
Well, there's one band in here that I know Jumbo's gonna hate, and it's not this one.
Okay.
I mean, it could be this one, but I know there's one that you're gonna hate way more than this. Okay. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Okay, Remain in Light is an 8-track record released in 1980. Oh, by the way, all this information, the blurb, comes from Wikipedia. If it's wrong here, it's wrong there. And also, I think most of these bands were nominated for Grammys, so all that information comes from the Grammy website. Remain in Light is an 8-track record released in 1980, coming in just over 40 minutes long. It's the band's fourth studio album, reaching number 19 on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart. It contains the singles Once in a Lifetime, Houses in Motion, Born Under Punches, The Heat Goes On, and Cross-Eyed and Painless. After the release of 1979's Fear of Music, Talking Heads sought to dispel notions that the band was a mere vehicle for frontman and songwriter David Byrne. I know at some point I'm going to pronounce his name wrong because it's spelled with a Y. Byrne struggled with writer's block, but adopted a scattered stream of consciousness lyrical style inspired by early rap and academic literature on Africa. Recording sessions started at Compass Point Studios in July 1980. The album's creation required additional musicians, particularly percussionists. Talking Heads used the working title Melody Attack throughout the studio process after watching a Japanese game show of the same name. Guitarist Jerry Harrison said the ambition was to blend rock and African genres rather than simply imitate African music. Brian Eno's production techniques and personal approach were key to the record's conception. Byrne has described the album's final mix as a spiritual piece of work, joyous and ecstatic, and yet it's serious. He has pointed out that in the end, there was less Africanism in Remain in Light than we implied. but the African ideas were far more important to get across than specific rhythms. According to Eno, the record uniquely blends funk and punk rock or new wave music. The first side contains more rhythmic songs, which include long instrumental interludes. Radiohead credited Remain in Light as a major influence on their 2000 album Kid A. Guitarist Johnny Greenwood had assumed Remain in Light was composed of loops, but later learned from Harrison that Talking Heads had actually played the parts repetitively. The artwork was conceived by bassist Tino Weymouth and drummer Chris France, and crafted with the help of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology's computers and design company MNC. The final mass-produced version of Remaining Light had one of the first computer-designed record jackets. It's hilarious that this album cover had to be designed by like a computing system at MIT, because you can make the shit like in Paint right now. Remain in Light was acclaimed by critics, who praised its sonic experimentation, rhythmic innovations, and cohesive merging of disparate genres. It had been featured in several publication lists of the year's best albums. It had been featured in several publication lists of the best albums of the 1980s and of all time, and is often considered Talking Heads' magnum opus. In 2017, the Library of Congress deemed the album culturally, historically, or artistically significant and selected it for preservation in the National Recording Registry. Remain in Light has been certified gold. Other albums by Talking Heads, they had Talking Heads 77 in 1977, More Songs About Buildings and Food about 1978, Fear of Music in 1979, Speaking in Tongues in 1983, Little Creatures in 1985, True Stories in 1986, and Naked in 1988. Rob, what do you think of Remain in Light?
Let's see. I think I gave this second place for the week. So this album to me is like a trance album. Like I'm getting vibes of like Miles Davis' Bitches Brew, where like this type of music I think is really good for like coding, or certain types of music like help me think clearly. Like certain repetitive music help certain types of music I can't if I'm trying to think and write, some music will either hurt me or help me. Like, so this kind of trance stuff, this super repetitive stuff, like helps me with that. But that said, I wouldn't want to like play music like this necessarily, this isn't my favorite type of music, but I don't know. There's some value to it. There's something weird about a band that you put on in the background. Like, it's like I was really into this type of music for a while when I was like 16 or something. I liked playing it because I felt like if I fucked up, nobody would fucking notice because nobody's fucking paying attention. And that's like the wrong fucking like way to go about music. I don't know. But anyways, like, yeah. So like this, there are verses and choruses to these songs, but like it's like one riff, but it's only a verse or a chorus because like, you know, you repeat the chorus and that makes it the chorus, and then you have different verses in between. I'm saying vocally, like it's the same fucking instrumentation throughout. So I don't know. So like I kind of like was like falling asleep and or like thinking about other shit when I was listening to this album. But it's not bad. I kind of like it, but like it's like I have weird feelings about an album that just makes me like kind of tune out and pay attention to everything but that. And I spent part of the week For several of these bands, I spent the week listening to other albums by these bands. I spent part of the week listening to Talking Heads 77, which has Psycho Killer on it. My ex loved Psycho Killer, and that album's more of like a regular fucking rock album where there's, you know, key changes, and there's like clearer instrumental differences between verse and chorus, and I don't know, the more like normal songwriting. And that shit's I don't know. That album is neat in that that there's a weird contrast between the lyrics and the music. It's like the music kind of sounds like a happy upbeat, but like the lyrics can be about like anxiety and shit like that. You know, Radiohead was doing this in 2000 or whatever. It's funny that we brought up how Radiohead was like listening to a bunch of Talking Heads. One thing they have in common, I believe, is Brian Eno was producing a lot of these Talking Heads albums, and Brian Eno went on to make a bunch of experimental electronic shit. And so I don't know, it's funny to think like people 20 years apart, like working with this, you know, I don't know where I'm going with that. Anyways, it's small world is what I'm trying to say. What else am I trying to say? Yeah, so when I think about the Talking Heads, I'm thinking about, fuck, how do I say this? I've been thinking a lot about like the romance world, right? Like part of like some people will tell you like they're like you have to be super fucking masculine, tough guy, fucking like if you're not fucking if you don't have a six pack of abs, you'll never bang chicks or whatever. But then I'm also thinking about, well, that can't possibly be true because Prince banged chicks, and so did like I'm pretty sure the Talking Heads were banging chicks too, and these dudes were like fucking nerds singing about anxiety. So I was always told that like if you have any anxiety at all, your lack of confidence will hurt your ability to bang chicks. But like Jack shared this video of it was called you're gonna have to tell me what it was called, but like a dude comes out, it's a video, dude is walking out, there's a fucking WWF logo on it or some shit, like so I'm imagining this guy is gonna come out and play taunt some other wrestler into coming into fighting him, but instead it's one guy with an acoustic guitar doing a stripped down version of Psycho Killer, and they're like, and then he's like tripping all over the stage, and I'm like, okay, what is it? So if you're like this, you're not supposed to be able to have success with women, but he does it with confidence, and so does that mean that he's good now? I'm so confused, but like so this week has gotten me thinking about all kinds of shit, and you guys are gonna have to chime in. What is the best way to bang chicks? I need all the help I can get. All right, I'm giving this second place for the week. That's it.
So that video that's David Byrne. That's so the Talking Heads have a movie called Stop Making Sense. I was gonna talk about it. I watched it last night. It's like a huge, big, like live performance. It's recorded over the span of four concerts they did in 1983, and then it's kind of cut and pasted together to make the final movie. And so David Byrne comes out with his acoustic guitar in the boombox, and he starts playing, and he plays Psycho Killer. And then the bass player comes out and plays the next song, and then they bring the drummer out, then they bring the other guitar player out, and then this whole big, gigantic band with five other people playing, five other musicians, is eventually assembled, and then they play the rest of the concert. And then as they're playing, they're dancing and running and doing all kinds of crazy shit, and there's like a whole bunch of stagehands coming out and doing stuff with lights and stuff in the... They eventually drop a backdrop behind them, and they put stuff on there. And yeah, he's like tripping all over the place, and it's really well done. It's the recording quality is fantastic, and they just re-released it in theaters last year. Becca went to see it with one of her friends. I did not go. I wish I had gone. So I ended up renting it from the library yesterday and watching it. And yeah, it's really good. They play about 20 songs. I think I posted the GIF of David Byrne in that huge jacket. That's from the Stop Making Sense show. Anyway, it's really good. The funny thing is that, yes, okay, these guys are dorks, all of them. All four of these dudes are like fucking big dorks. And I didn't know a lot about Talking Heads before this week. But one of the things is it's always weird for me to see an album that so many people hold in high regards. Okay, it's being like brought into the National Registry of Music, and it didn't even sell a million copies in the United States. It's weird for me to see something like Limp Bizkit when they sold like 9-10 million of like Significant Other or Chocolate Starfish in the Hot Dog Flavored Water. And then this sold like 500,000 copies. So yeah, I don't know if people were just listening to this on the radio or where they were hearing it, because obviously they weren't buying it. But anyway, these guys are dorks. And I think that I was tainted for the Talking Heads for so long because I heard Once in a Lifetime. And the thing about that song is it's whack. Everybody, like, if you don't remember it, go listen to it. You'll know it. It's like one of their biggest hits. And like, I still don't know how I feel about the song. It's different. It's really dorky, but it's also very memorable. It's a song I would never just put on, but that's a song I remember hearing a bunch. And I was like, oh, this is like a dork band. Like, I'm never going to listen to them. That song is like the one standout song on this record. And I don't mean like the best. I mean, one that doesn't even fit. All the other stuff is like a cohesive piece. It feels like this very atmospheric, like vibing album. And then you have fucking Once in a Lifetime, and it is dorky, but I think for a long time that had kind of skewed my perception of this band. And I thought they were just dorks, and they are dorks. And the people that they have joining them on stage in concert are also dorks. So the nine of them are up there acting like wackos, and half of them have to be on cocaine. At least the keyboard player in that concert is 100% on cocaine, and he's looking for more. There's nine people playing it. There's like a whole crew running it. He brings the crew out afterwards, and there are cuts in the show where his shirt might be, they pace this out. Obviously the all four shows in the creation of the movie cost over $1 million. So this was all figured out beforehand. And so there will be parts where you can see his clothes are drenched, and that will be the part where like the next song does not involve him, and he'll be off stage doing whatever, hitting the hot spots real quick or something, throwing on new clothes and coming back out. No, it's really good. If you haven't seen it, Stop Making Sense, it's really, really good. It's very impressive. And there are times where he's like running in circles around the stage, and so there's backup singers on there. There's another keyboard player. There's another percussionist. There's another guitar player. And as I'm watching that, one of the things I'm thinking is like how much more it makes me hate like the modern version of Motley Crue. So, you know, Motley Crue allegedly now doesn't actually play. They like play to tapes. And so it's like these dudes, there's a 9-piece band on stage. They're going crazy. They're running around. It's a whole show. They have the stagehands coming out, and it sounds fantastic. And sure, there's probably re-recording and touch-ups going on afterwards, and this is recorded over four concerts, so they're taking the best cuts of like each night. And there are those down segments where there you could cut in either, you know, any of them. It's like, okay, all the lights go down for this for 5 minutes or whatever. You can cut any of the nights into there to fill them in. But then you take a band like Motley Crue that can't be bothered anymore. They're so lazy. They can't be bothered to like learn how to play well. And then you have this huge band doing crazy shit. Like they're running around and they don't even sound winded. Like they had to have worked out before they did that. They had to be in good shape. Everyone had their parts done. I don't know. It's really fucking impressive. It's really good. A lot of people say it's the best recorded concert ever. It very well could be. This is not just people going out onto a stage and playing a 30-minute set or an hour long set. Like it cost $1 million to make this in 1980. So, or 1983, whenever. So it's a big thing. Anyway, whatever. Very impressive. I loved it. I would definitely watch it again. I'm giving this album, either one or two for the week. There are two that I really think are neck and neck in how much I like them. Oh, the drummer and the bass player are married. Mm. And so there's a song in here, The Great Curve, which is my favorite song on the record. And the two of them together, so they were married or they were together before the forming of this band, I believe. But their rhythm together is like really fucking good. Like they're on point. They are not just a bullshit like, she's in the band because we're together. Like they're both locked in. They have a great fucking tight groove together. Song's fucking awesome. The Great Curve was not in Stop Making Sense, but it should have been, because there were nine people on stage and there's all kinds of stuff going on in that song, and that would have been enough people to really probably make it sound the best it could be instead of just four people. I've been ranting for Jomo. What do you think of Remain in Light?
Dude, whoever said that these guys need to go in like the National Registry of Music are smoking crack. Yeah. This is okay. This is not, they're legit on crack cocaine.
Yo, someone get some. Say you had to say yes or no. They give you this record, and they give you Chocolate Starfish to put in the registry. Which one are you picking?
Chocolate Starfish, baby. Chocolate Starfish all day, baby. What the fuck are you talking about? Bro, I do. Oh, I would take the Chocolate Starfish CD case and do like three lines, and then get in a DUI wreck, bro. I ain't fucking around. That record's no, way better than Talking Heads. But I do blame this band for my childhood and everything, and everyone who's ever wronged me in any way. This band is the reason why those people did that. This is fucking this new wave, synth pop, avant-garde abortion of a record is like, it's just terrible, man. This thing should be sanctioned by the UN for all its wrongdoing. This band, I'm going to say something that's going to be fucking disclaimer, is going to be really offensive, but this band is setting white people back more than Derek Chauvin. Okay. Okay. Those of you who don't know who Derek Chauvin is.
Yeah, everyone knows who he is, bro.
I don't know who he is.
Okay. Wow. They're Chauvin.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I do know who he is. I Googled him.
Yeah. I hate you, Jomo.
This shit's unlistenable, bro. I didn't like it, bro. It reminded me of what's the band we did before that's Oingo Boingo. This shit reminded me of Oingo Boingo, and my dick went into an innie than an abby, bro. I blame Jack Falcon for making us listen to this goddamn catastrophe of a record. Things I'd rather listen to more than this. Give me Rock Lobster by the B-52s before this record. give me that fucking... I don't know what possessed you to choose this fucking record, bro, but 0 for 10 for me, no redeeming qualities. I don't like it. It's bad.
Wow.
I thought that the Talking Heads were going to out-white Oingo Boingo, but they don't. Oingo Boingo is definitely still the whitest band ever created.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, which is fine. I mean, I'm not hating on them. I'm saying, like, I thought these guys were going to be whiter, but that's because of, like, if this whole record was once in a lifetime type stuff, then yeah, it would have. Anyway, yeah, this is a really atmospheric record. There's a lot of breathing room in it. And I don't know, I think this record works well. Rob brought up, like, almost having it in the background and just letting it play while you're doing other stuff. And I can absolutely see that. I think the drummer of this band is awesome. And the funny thing is that I made this joke yesterday, or maybe I didn't, but I was thinking it when I was watching Stop Making Sense. This entire band is white, right? And the drummer is white, but all the five musicians they have playing with them are all black guys. And it was funny that there's like a bunch of black guys on stage and the white dude is the drummer. Anyway, he is actually a very good drummer. Apparently somebody put him at number 12 of all time. I don't know who else is on the list, but he is really good. And he was great during the concert. He killed it there. He kills it on this record. Oh yeah. And like, yeah, the structure of this record is a very different approach to songwriting. I still haven't fully wrapped my head around it. But yeah, you're not getting these big choruses throughout like you do pretty much on the other stuff we're going to discuss today. They do have at least one big chorus in Once in a Lifetime. And these guys actually have some songs that I didn't know they wrote. You guys remember the song Don't Worry, Be Happy? Like, there is some version of that, if it's not the original one, that is by this band. They played it in on their show. But yeah, they Psycho Killer is a banger as well. But yeah, no, I like this album a lot. It's very atmospheric, and it's recorded well. it's kind of like, yeah, sometimes they might play the same line 50 times. And I do think it's cool that instead of just playing it once to a metronome and looping it, they are just playing it a bunch of times. I can't remember what song it was, but during Stop Making Sense, there's like a couple guitar lines that both of the guys are playing, and they probably play the line like 40 times. I can't imagine playing a line 40 times and not being spaced out and mess it up, and they don't mess it up the entire time, so good for them. Anyway, let's read a couple YouTube comments. First one says, I remember shoplifting this album in 1980.
Bro.
Next one says, I love how the guitarists in this group will play a phrase and then chill out for a while. I wish more guitarists did this. Not every single second of a song has to have guitar sounds. Next one says, Born Under Punches is still one of the best album openers ever. Next one, Remain in Light, has certainly stood the test of time. And lastly, this is just 8 bangers in a row. Post-punk new wave doesn't get much better than this. Is there anything that anyone wants to say about Remain in Light?
No.
Not at all.
Okay. All right. Well, watch Stop Making Sense sometime if you have 2 hours and it's streaming somewhere.
I'm fighting for my life.
All right. I'm spinning the wheel.
Why are you gay?
All right. Landed on The Cure. This is the band that I knew Joel was going to hate the CD. All right. We ready?
Yeah.
All right. Disintegration is a 12-track record released in 1989, coming in just under 72 minutes long. It's the band's eighth studio album, reaching number 92 on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart. It contains the singles Lullaby, Fascination Street, Love Song, and Pictures of You. The band's 1987 double album, Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me, was commercially successful with a sold-out worldwide sold-out world tour booked in its wake. Despite the international success the band was now enjoying, internal friction was increasing due to Tolhurst's increasing alcoholism. At the end of the Kissing tour in support of the album, Smith became uncomfortable with the side effects of being a pop star and moved to West London. Disintegration marks a return to the introspective gothic rock style that the band had established in the early 1980s. As he neared the age of 30, vocalist and guitarist Robert Smith had felt an increased pressure to follow up the band's pop successes with a more enduring work. This, coupled with a disaster for the this coupled with a distaste for the group's newfound popularity, caused Smith to lapse back into the use of hallucinogenic drugs, the effects of which had a strong influence on the production of the album. Smith's anguish prior to the recording of Disintegration gave way to the realization that he would turn 30 in 1 year. This realization was frightening to him, and he felt all masterpieces in rock and roll had been completed well before the band members reached such an age. Smith consequently began to write music without the rest of the band. The material he had written instantly took a dismal and depressing form. The group recorded a total of 32 songs with a 16-track recorder by the end of the summer. Of these 32 songs, 12 of them would make it onto the final album. Following the completion of Disintegration, Smith noted that The Cure had, despite my best efforts, actually become everything that I didn't want us to become. a stadium rock band. Furthermore, Smith claimed the album's title was the most appropriate one that he could think of. Most of the relationships with the band outside of the band fell apart. Calling it Disintegration was kind of tempting fate. The family idea of the group really fell apart too. It was the end of a golden period. Disintegration has been certified 2x platinum. Other albums by The Cure, they had Three Imaginary Boys in 1979, 17 Bro. Seconds in 1980, Faith in 1981, Pornography in 1982, The Top in 1984, The Head on the Door in 1985, Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me in 1987, Wish in 1992, Wild Mood Swings in 1996, Blood Flowers in 2000, The Cure in 2004, and 413 Dream in 2008. Jomo, how much do you hate Disintegration?
I'm going to keep it short and sweet. I hate this fucking band. I hate this album.
Let me ask you a question, Jomo.
I hate this fucking band.
I know you do. Let me ask you a question. How much of Hot Topic's bottom line is riding on Robert Smith not being outed as a sex pervert?
Him and fucking the dude from Morrissey. Like,
yeah. If they come out as sex perverts, that company's going under.
For sure. Hot Topic used to be good. What's crazy, man, is I used to pick up fucking like a record here and there, but Hot Topic now just smells like fucking Non Champa and BO, bro. It smells terrible.
What is Non Champa?
It's like a fucking incense that fucking dirty hippies and fucking Marxist fucking douchebags light up.
Why do you know that?
Because I hate them.
Oh, okay.
Know your enemy, bro.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I'd never really listened to a full Cure CD. I know, I'm pretty sure Matt Skiba loves this band. Have heard some of their singles. They had Love Song, which is on this one, and then Friday I'm in Love, which probably everybody knows. There's actually more chimes on this record than you might think. So The Cure is like a goth emo band. I think this CD is legit. I'm giving it either number one or number two for the week. I think this is actually a great record. I have it in my notes here. I know Jomo's going to hate it, but the atmosphere, I think, is like really unmasked in this. The only one that comes close is Remain in Light. And I think this record is almost flawless to me. Just like how everyone works together on this album, like really well. There's like songs like Love Song, like everybody knows that song. Somehow it was the third single. I don't know why it wasn't the first, but like the first single on this album was Lullaby and then Fascination Street, and both are fine. But if there's like one song to define this album, it's probably Love Song. So why it wasn't first, I don't know. I could listen to that song on repeat for hours. But yeah, no, this is a good record. I just really like the atmosphere. Everything blends in well together. I don't know how many people are in the band at this point. The guy who I had talked about, his first name is Lol, or at least like the name that everybody calls him. Apparently, like, he would just be like blacked out drunk during everything, shows, recording, writing, whatever. So as soon as this album was wrapped up, he got booted out. So I know somebody at one point was playing the keyboards instead of him. I don't know how big the band is at this point. But yeah, the synthesizers in the mix, I don't know. This album, I think, is really good. There's only a couple things that ever threw me off. There's a main riff in the song Lullaby that is like this new wave riff, and there's like a mandolin or something behind it. And it pulls me out of this whole, the atmosphere that they've created, because it's kind of like really corny. I think it's a riff that might have sounded better on paper than it actually did playing it. And it's a line that, when I think of Follow the Reaper by Children of Bodom, they have some ridiculous melody lines on that album that will make you laugh, but you will love. And I feel like if any band could do that melody correctly, it's them. Make a power metal song with that, and it might be good. Otherwise, take that riff and fucking sink it to the bottom of the Marianas Trench. Rob, what do you think of this album?
So if I had discovered the Cure when I was 16, I might have really liked them. It reminded me of music I was making at the time. Instead, what happened is I was 18 years old. Queen was my favorite band, and there was some fucking like guitar magazine or something where fucking Robert Smith says like I hate Queen and everything they've ever done. So I had a real fucking personal beef with Robert Smith at the time. I would say fuck Robert Smith, that guy fucking sucks. And then like I listened to his music, I didn't think it was any good. And like I'm just like, here's a guy who can like barely sing and like everything's fucking monotone and sounds the same, and this dude's fucking criticizing Freddie Mercury, who has range and fucking has written a fucking million like fucking good songs. So but okay, one thing has changed since then. You know, people's opinions about music should not be confused for fact, and it's not a real reason to hate somebody. Like, it's the same we are critics now, and like somebody out there might hate us for our opinions on R. Kelly or some fucking shit. And like my response to that is like, opinions are like assholes. Everyone has them and they all stink. Like, who fucking cares? If I say I don't like bananas, like that's not a threat to you. You can have as many bananas as you want. All it means is if we're at a party together, you get to eat all the bananas. You know what I mean? It's just like hating somebody because they do or don't like some like music or like some food or some whatever. Like, that's not a reason to hate anybody. Who fucking gives a shit? I've developed much more of a sense of humor about that. And I remember the new the Blink-182 Untitled album. You know, I remember hating the Robert Smith song the first 40 times that I heard it, and then every time I fucking burned a copy of that CD, I just removed that song so I wouldn't fucking listen to it. And then at some point in my life, I gave it another chance, and I'm like, okay, I like this song. I like how it's different from the rest of the album. I don't care that it doesn't sound like fucking upbeat or whatever. I just like it for what it is. And like, Yeah. So I want to kind of summarize my opinion about The Cure by talking about the Get Up Kids cover of Close to Me. Basically, that song is what it is when The Cure does it, and then I really like the Get Up Kids cover of it, and one major thing that they do with it is they do a key change for the chorus. To me, there's such a fucking problem with The Cure. It's like, okay, we want it to sound fucking dark, so this song is an A minor. Every riff is going to be an A minor. Every riff is going to begin with an A. So, you know, verse, chorus, everything is going to begin with an A. And then, like, we'll meander into some other shit. Like, who fucking cares? And, like, you know, but we're going to come, like, every fucking phrase is going to begin with an A. And at a certain point, this is a nail on the chalkboard thing where I'm craving, give me a fucking key change. I fucking need it. I'm just, it's drilling into my fucking head. And if you don't fucking fucking play a different chord. Like start the chorus with a G. Fucking do something. Like you're driving me fucking crazy with this thing that you're doing. Do you not realize that there's 12 fucking notes here? What the fuck is up with your songwriting? And so, but yeah, that's how I wrote music when I was 16. It's like when I was playing music for 1 year or whatever, I wanted it to sound dark, and I didn't really have a clear. I knew what scales were, and so I would pick a fucking key and I would meander around in the key, and that's fine when you're jamming in your basement. But like, I need riffs. I need some specificity. If you sound like you're meandering, I'm not into it. I'm fucking bored. I don't fucking yeah. So I don't like The Cure. I don't hate them. I don't hate Robert Smith like personally anymore, but I just don't find anything interesting about his music. Fourth place, that's it.
I'm fighting for my life.
For real, okay. Like that, The Cure is fighting for their life to make good music.
Yeah, I'm not about to turn into one of the goth kids from South Park, but I don't. This album has like it gets a lot of accolades, and I think it deserves them. This CD is 12 tracks. It's over 72 minutes long, so that's an average of 6 minutes per song. But there's a lot of space throughout. And normally, I would say that's probably bloated. Like when we talk about Saint Anger, I think Saint Anger is like 70 something minutes long, and that album is bloated.
Yeah.
I don't remember how many tracks are on that record, but it is bloated at the 70 whatever minute it comes in at. And I would normally say that 12 tracks, 72 minutes is bloated, but I think it works well here. I don't know. Again, there's a really good atmosphere created by this lineup, this track listing, this recording session, this everything about this. I'm personally all in on. There's a song Fascination Street. It was one of the singles. Like, I'm not even joking when I say I could listen to an hour long version of that song. It's one of the best songs on the record. What else do other ones I want to talk about? So like the longest song on the record, the same Deep Water as You is over 9 minutes long. Again, I would normally be like, yo, there's probably too much bloat in there. I have mentioned before, I like my songs short to the point. But I don't know, they're creating something else here. And I think it works. You could hit the lights, you could vibe out to it. And, yeah, I don't know. I think it's good. Again, I'm not gonna, when you guys see me next, I'm not gonna have the hair from the South Park goth kids, but I think this record is good. Let's read a couple of YouTube comments. First, I've been falling asleep to this since 89. I don't know if that's really... Anyway, I'm excited about the first three tracks of this.
He's probably getting molested.
I fall asleep to this album.
I would commit suicide to this album.
All right. Next one, I want the first three tracks of this album to be played at my funeral. These are the comments I expect from people commenting on The Cure albums. Next, even the cover art is incredible. Next one says it took 20 plus years, but South Park sent me here. And lastly, just got dumped. Thankfully, The Cure is still here to get me through. Yeah, is there anything else that anybody wants to say about Disintegration before we move on?
Yeah.
I'm fighting for my life!
Nice.
Yeah, that's such a good... clip.
We're not getting rid of that's staying on the soundboard permanently.
Oh, yes. Of course. All right. Let's oops, hang on a second. All right, let's spin the wheel.
I came looking for booty.
When you say teenage, how are we talking?
I hate you. All right, it landed on the cars. All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. The Cars is a 9-track record released in 1978, coming in just over 35 minutes long. It's the band's debut studio album, reaching number 18 on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart. It contains the singles Just What I Needed, My Best Friend's Girl, and Good Times Roll. Formed in Boston in 1976, The Cars consisted of Rick Ocasek, Benjamin Orr, Elliot Easton, David Robinson, and Greg Hawks, all of whom had been in and out of multiple bands throughout the 1970s. After becoming a club staple, the band recorded a number of demos in early 1977. Some of these songs later appeared in finished form on The Cars, while others were saved for a later release. Both Arista and Elektra... Arista and Elektra attempted to sign the band, but in the end, Elektra was chosen due to the lack of new wave acts, allowing the band to stand out more than they would have had they signed with the new wave heavy Arista. Yeah, if they had signed with the New Wave Heavy Arista.
Nice.
I'm fighting for my fucking life, man. Here they had the Eagles and Jackson Brown, and along comes this crazy Boston band who wanted a black and white photo collage on their cover. Musically, the Cars has been described as a new wave power pop and synth rock record. It featured a large amount of technology on many of its tracks due to the band's appreciation for new equipment. Robinson said, "We'd always get the latest stuff from music stores, even if it would be obsolete in 2 months. It reached the point where I'd have 10 or 12 foot switches to hit during a short set." Unlike many of the Cars' album covers, the cover was designed by the record company rather than drummer David Robinson. Robinson said that in an interview that he had designed a very different album cover that cost $80. He continued, "I remembered the price exactly. It was completely finished and everything, but it was a little more bizarre than the cover that they had in mind. So they changed some of it because of copyright problems and put it in as the inner sleeve. But I think it was way more how we envisioned we were then." The cover featuring Russian-born model, singer, writer, and journalist Natalia Medvedeva was not well liked by the members of the band. Guitarist Elliot Easton expressed dislike for the big grinning face, saying, "Man, I got tired of that cover." At 1978's 21st Annual Grammy Awards, the Cars were nominated for Best New Artist, but lost to A Taste of Honey, which is a band I've never heard of. The Cars has been certified 6 times platinum. Other Cars releases were Candio in 1979, Panorama in 1980, Shake It Up in 1981, Heartbeat City in 1984, Door to Door in 1987, and Move Like This in 2011. All right. So everybody knows the Cars. I've always liked this record. There's lots of really good songs on it. One, these guys fall into a noob trap. The first 3 songs on this record are like 3 of the biggest bangers of classic rock, right? Good Times Roll, My Best Friend's Girl, and Just What I Needed. Why you would put those songs back to back to back on the beginning of an album, I don't know. That means you'll be following that for the entire rest of it. But they did. They have big balls. I watched an interview with, I believe it was the lead singer of this band. He's a really funny, charming guy. He's always joking around. And apparently, these guys opened for some band in year X. I don't know what year, 1977. I don't know. They get booed off the stage, and a year later, they're headlining arena tours like all over the world. So this is just a fun CD. I don't think it's a perfect record. There's a lot of people who say this is like a band's greatest hits. And there are, so besides the big 3 songs that are on here, You're All I've Got Tonight. That's a song that was not a single, but it's definitely bled onto the radio over the years. It's just as good as like the big boys from the record. I hope they were like closing shows with it. But then you have like songs that are like pretty meh, like Bye Bye Love is like blah. There's another song on here that's pretty fucking blah. I'm In Touch With Your World. So I don't know. There's another song on here that's called Moving in Stereo that is so cheesy. It's so 80s new wave. So this is obviously pre-80s, but the song is just like, it sounds like 80s new wave ridiculousness, and I kind of love it because of that. So this debut has to still be one of the best ever. It's not on the level of like Boston or Appetite for Destruction. There's an echelon of like the best debuts of all time, and there might be some people who put this up there, but I think it just comes into like heavy, like banger status heavy, and to where it kind of lets off the gas as it goes down, as it goes through the track list. Because yeah, like I said, these guys put out like 3 of the biggest classic rock bangers back to back on this album on their on their debut. And another thing, when I was looking, so this is the only album I remember by this band. There might be a couple other songs I've heard from them, but 4 out of the 5 other records that they've put out have gone platinum, and 2 of them have gone 4 times platinum. I don't know any of the fucking singles off of those albums. At least I didn't look them up, but off name recognition alone, I didn't know what they were. So I didn't realize these guys really stayed popular after this album. The singer died, I think, in 2008, 2009. Around that time, so I don't know if they record. I don't know what the Move Like This 2011 is, if he was already dead at the time or if they had some stuff that he was on before then and they put it out. But yeah, there's the 3 bangers on here are so big. Everybody loves them. They're classic songs. I'm giving this number 3 for the week. But yeah, it is good. It's just a fun album to listen to. Rob, what do you think of the Cars?
So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to post a photo of their artwork for Candy-O. It's a nice photo. I'm gonna give this number one for the week. I've never listened to the Cars. I don't think this is one of those bands that people have always people have said people have talked about them. I didn't fucking know who they were. I didn't know what they sounded like really, and I didn't know to me this is a fucking good classic rock album, and I have heard them just what I needed. I definitely have heard on the radio, and maybe My Best Friend's Girl also, maybe Good Times Roll also. But yeah, I listened to this all the way through several times. I'm In Touch With Your World, I skip. Don't Like It At All. Moving In Stereo, I skip. So that means I listened to seven songs on the album. Seven out of nine songs I listened to. That's a pretty fucking good album by my standards. I almost always I feel like if I like three songs on an album, that's a pretty good album by my standards or whatever. So I thought this album was quite fucking good. And I kind of wondered why this band wasn't as big as Queen or something. And the only answer I have is their singer is okay. I mean, they have that big Queen sound sometimes where there's the main singer and then there's a response by a full fucking, it sounds like there's 10 fucking people singing to respond to them. I really like that sound. Maybe Queen did it best, but it's fucking good here. It makes fucking perfect sense here. But yeah, this dude isn't Freddie Mercury, but he's good. So what are we supposed to say here? Who's as good as Freddie Mercury? Fucking nobody. There's only one Freddie Mercury. There's no replacing him. So I don't know. I had a good time with this album. It's fucking fun. My Best Friend's Girlfriend Used to Be Mine. That line fucking hurts. That was kind of a thought-provoking song for me. It's when I think of, gatekeeping and how, I think, I was always told that if you want to be popular and successful, you have to make happy-sounding music. And there's every time I hear something that mixes emotions in an interesting way and was a big hit, it kind of perks up my ears. I'm yeah, they're if you're not paying super close attention to the lyrics, it just sounds like a fucking song about infatuation or whatever, but there's so much pain in that song, or at least, that's so I don't know. That piqued my interest. What else do I want to say? I don't know. Good album, first place for me. That's it.
So My Best Friend's Girlfriend. Okay. Song is about a guy who dated a girl who is now dating his best friend, but she still hangs around in the group and he wants her back. So, Jomo, bro code has to have been broken for this song to have taken place, right?
Someone has to die after that. Yeah. You have to meet up in a grassy knoll with two seppuku swords and someone's got to die.
Yeah. The bro code had to have been broken for this situation to have initially taken place. Great song, and there's hand claps in it, so I'm giving even a higher rating because of that. The last song of this album, All Mixed Up, has saxophone in it, which is getting a higher rating just because of that. This record, I think there's beauty in the simplicity. We're going to talk about people. I think it was whatever band we haven't talked about yet. I think they were the ones who were talking about the less is more approach with three people in a band. There's not three people in this band, but there's a simplicity on this record where there's nothing insane. Even the guitar playing on, which song is it? Don't Just Stop. It's good. It's the best playing on the record, but it's not flashy. This dude is not guitar wise, not trying to be flashy. He's trying to get the tops to come off and he's trying to keep the party going, which I appreciate. But yeah, there's a simplicity in this record that works. Again, there's nothing insane that anyone here is doing, but they're just killing it as a rock band and good for them. Jumbo, what do you think of this record?
Bro, here's what I think about the Cars. This is dog shit, okay? The record is just reeking of gimmicks and lame.
Where's the clap?
Okay, it's dog shit, bro. It's just lame riffs. The fact that these guys came from Boston is an embarrassment and a violation of my constitutional rights, all right? Mm-hmm. There are clear hits on here, but it's only hits that dudes who drink Bush Light and beat their wives listen to, you know? It's nothing I would fucking listen to personally. The sense of keyboards, they committed a hate crime on my ears, bro. And I'm going to say this. I don't say this lightly, man. I would say that I would listen to R. Kelly before I listen to The Cars. Because it remixed to Ignition, bro. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I can forgive a little pee-pee.
It's a banger,
yeah. You know what I'm saying? Other than that, because they have hits, I'm just going to rate them 1 out of 10 for the week. Just not my jam, bro. This is definitely like dudes who like schedule to have date nights and sex with their wife. This is what they listen to, and I don't like that.
Here's a live feed of Jomo listening to this album.
I'm fighting for my life.
That's true. That's very true.
Nice.
Anyway, let's read some YouTube comments.
Yeah.
First one, the soundtrack of my adolescence. Next one says, comes from a time when owning a record was something you really cared about and listened to all the way through. Next comment, sounds like a greatest hits. Next one says, one of the best of the decade. And lastly, this band and Boston were two of my most important high school discoveries. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff on here. Anything else anyone wants to say about The Cars? Are we ready to move on?
Move on.
All right, let me drop this artwork.
When Jomo. You say teenage, how are we talking?
Oh, boy. I hate you. All right. Synchronicity is a 10-track record released in 1983, coming just under 40 minutes long. It's the band's fifth and final studio album, reaching number one on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart, and contains the singles Every Breath You Take, Wrapped Around Your Finger, King of Pain, Synchronicity 2, and Synchronicity 1. The album marked a significant reduction in the reggae influences that were a part of the band's first four studio albums, instead featuring production-heavy textures and liberal use of synthesizers that at times drove entire songs. The influence of world music can also be heard in such songs as Tea in the Sahara and Walking in Your Footsteps. As opposed to the band's previous effort, 1981's Ghost in the Machine, the songs are much sparser with less overdubbing, more akin to the trio feel and the band's aesthetic of less is more. As with Ghost in the Machine, the recording for Synchronicity took place over a period of 6 weeks at Air Studios beginning in December 1982. The three band members recorded the basic tracks live in separate rooms, Stuart Copeland with his drums in the dining room, Sting in the control room, and guitarist Andy Summers in the actual studio. This was done for two reasons, to obtain the best sound for each instrument and for social reasons. While tracking live, the band would do multiple takes of each song. They would listen through each take and select the best parts, which would be edited together into a master backing track before they recorded overdubs. During the recording of Every Breath You Take, Sting and Copeland came to blows with each other. The song was originally attempted with the live method, but due to numerous failed takes, it had to be assembled entirely from overdubs. The album's original cover art consisted of a series of photographs overlaid with transparent horizontal stripes of blue, red, and yellow. The artwork was available in 36 variations with different arrangements of the color stripes and different photographs of the band members. At 1983's 26th Annual Grammy Awards, Synchronicity won Best Rock Performance by a Duo or Group with Vocal, and Every Breath You Take won Best Pop Performance by a Duo or Group with Vocal. Synchronicity was nominated for Album of the Year, but lost to Michael Jackson with Thriller, and Every Breath You Take was nominated for Record of the Year, but lost to Michael Jackson with Beat It. At 1985's 28th Annual Grammy Awards, The Police Synchronicity Concert Video was nominated for Best Long Form, Best Music Video Long Form, but lost to Huey Lewis in the News with The Heart of Rock and Roll. Synchronicity has been certified 8 times platinum. Other albums by The Police. I'm going to try to pronounce these, but they have some fucking whack album titles. Outlandos de Amor in 1978, Regatta de Blanc in 1979, Zenyatta Mandata in 1980, and Ghost in the Machine in 1981. Rob, what do you think of Synchronicity?
So I don't know if you guys know this about me, but I have listened to a ton of The Police in my lifetime. Stuart Copeland's one of my favorite fucking drummers of all time. I fucking will suck that dude's dick right now. But yeah, okay. So this album, I'm giving third place. I don't. So like these guys hate each other at this point in the band. You heard that in what you were saying earlier. They needed to record separately. They're fighting, and so like you know they can't even fucking be in the same like room. Like and it it was I think they kind of attributed that as like, you know, our music is so fucking important that we have to play together because our music is so fucking good, even though we hate each other. That's kind of my fucking nightmare. And I think that you said this was their final album. They played like a couple of shows together at some point, 2004 or something, whatever year that was, but it fucking sucks when you don't like your bandmates, and I don't, what a fucking nightmare that is. And so this album, like, Stewart doesn't get much amazing drum time on this album, and I don't love this album. It's just okay. I mean, like, Every Breath You Take, that's a fucking smash pop hit, and like, apparently Sting knew it was a big hit when he was working on it. I used to play that on guitar when I was fucking 15. So there's, in one thing I like about the songwriting there is like, there's a couple of different tails for it. So like, you can end it with on the major fucking G or whatever. You can end it on the minor A or whatever. And he'll switch it up to like, now that was at the time as a novice, like, guitar student, just like, taking note that you could do that was good for me to know, playing around with mood and playing around with, that was a good eye opening thing for me. And, in that song, like, I think it's cool that it kind of builds, you know, that it's a certain way, and then you add keyboards halfway through, and then I don't know, and then like, because there is a new version of this song, I don't fucking know what it's called and who does it, but like, some like new rap group or whatever does a different version of it, like sampled the instrumentals and did something else with it. And oh, and it has fucking 1.9 billion plays on Spotify, I think. So this is a big fucking hit. It's bigger than fucking Africa by Toto. It's I'm not shitting on that. I'm just saying, like, this is like the fucking pop era of like this band, and that's not what I love about them. It's just it's the face they have. I hate King of Pain. Okay, here's an opinion I have about so certain things are needles, are fucking nails on the chalkboard for me, right? So there's something, I'm going to call it too many chord changes too fast. Like, if something can be that to me, and it's nails on a chalkboard. And actually, I've learned that there are ways that you can smooth it out if you, like, if you create the atmosphere the right way. Like, if one fucking piece of the puzzle is too fucking busy, and then something else is like more like not as busy, it's like more kind of like super fucking simple, then sometimes those two things will blend in a way that I will love it. I will love the result. It's like, and that's a magical fucking thing that can happen in music, is something that would irritate me on its own, when blended with other things, turns into something magical. But fucking King of Pain is the opposite of that. It's like they took the too many fucking chord changes thing, and then they all like doubled down, like multiple instruments doing it at the same time, and it's like, it's so that they're just all fucking attacking me at once. And I've only listened to that song like once in the past 10 years, but it was in my head for most of this week, and that's what I fucking hate about that song, is like, it is so fucking catchy, but like, I fucking hate it, so I don't want it in my head, god damn it. And that's a song I've always fucking hated. Like, you know, I used to listen to Greatest Hits all the time and all that. But yeah, the other song I really like on this album is Wrapped Around Your Finger. I quoted that earlier to fucking introduce Jomo. Yeah, that song, my boy Stewart gets a solo time. You know, he's got some nasty fills in that song. I love that song. But anyways, the stuff that I like by The Police is the early reggae stuff. Now, when I was in college, like, people were saying it's absolutely unacceptable to listen to The Police because, you know, they stole the sacred rhythms. And so it's what do they call it today? When white people steal shit made by other people and then like make all the money off of it, cultural appropriation. Yes. So I comprehend that argument, and it's like, you know, maybe if I had heard other drummers first, maybe I would have been less loyal to The Police. But like, There's certain things about that Stewart does that he was the first person I heard to do them, and so to me they were mind blowing. I can't say whether he's the best of all time. I can't say whether he's a fucking thief or whatever. All I can say is I heard these things for the first time. He did them. He did them fucking at a master level, and so I have this fucking. He has this God status in my brain, whether he fucking deserves it or not. To me, he is that fucking guy. It's just like, I'm still like, most of this week I was listening to Outlandos de Amor, the 78 album. He has so many fucking fills on Roxanne, and even like, let me pull up this album really quick. But there's so many fucking places on this album where that dude fucking kills it, where he's things that most drummers fucking don't like. Who's the fucking drummer? Bron Daler from Mastodon. I fucking love that dude, but he will repeat bass drum patterns. So it's like he's not thinking about the whole album. He's just like he's doing something like, okay, here's a part. I'll do something here and it sounds good. Okay. And it does sound good, but it also drives me crazy because I'm like, oh, you're reusing a fill. You're reusing a bass drum pattern. You were using something, from somewhere else in the album, and I fucking hear it and it sounds lazy to me and fuck you. Like, but Stewart Copeland is not doing that. It's like every fucking like quick beat, every double stroke on the hi-hat, every fucking like, offbeat fucking thing that he's doing, it's all fucking different. It's as if he has his entire discography in his brain at once, and he's like, and he doesn't fucking repeat himself. And so I'm just like, here's a dude who is respecting my time better than fucking like he knows, it's as if he knows, like, if a person who's fucking paying attention, I'm going to do everything in my power to keep them interested by like exploring the whole fucking drum kit, the whole fucking everything that there is to do. I'm gonna fucking do it. And I don't know if I'm explaining it right. All I'm saying is I fucking love this dude. And yeah, the early like reggae fucking shit, Outlandos de Amor, that album has such So Lonely is the name of the other song I like on that album. Well, I mean I liked a bunch of songs in that album, but yeah, there's so many like awesome drum fills and the like, what would you call it? The dynamics on this album are quite good. Like, I love the like, you know, the laid backness that can go into like a heavier rock thing. I love I love the 78 version of the Police. That's my fucking shit. The 83 version, okay, they were a pop success. That's not my Police. My Police is the 78 version. And that's it.
Very nice, very nice. Stewart Copeland did the original Spiral the Dragon soundtracks. Let's show some respect to that, please. So yeah, this record, there are things I love about it, there are things I hate about it, and there's things I just don't care. There are people who say if something big comes out and you weren't alive for it, you will never have the appreciation that somebody has when it did come out. And I'm going to read a bunch of people's comments jerking off over this album later. But when I listen to this, I'm trying to understand why people love this record so much, because I don't get it. Personally, I'm giving this number 4 for the week. I would give it number 5 if that wasn't even a possibility. At one point, this band, The Police, were the biggest band on planet Earth. And Wikipedia says that they were part of the second British invasion. Anyway, I don't remember what show I was watching, but I remember somebody saying when The Police were having the reunion tour, the one that Rob was talking about, early 2000s, whenever that was, the person like coaching them was like, don't play any of your new stuff. Nobody wants to hear it. So I figured that they had put out records since then, but they haven't. This is their final album as The Police. They have all done solo stuff. Stewart Copeland has done movies, video games, all kinds of stuff like that. Sting has had solo albums, which was a song called Desert Rose. I know Becca played it the other day. It's boring. It's lame. Who gives a shit?
Bullshit ass song.
Yeah, it was big in the late 90s or something. And then Andy, whatever the hell is Andy Summers, I don't know what he has done since. But collectively, they have not done anything else that's been officially released. This is their most popular album sales-wise by a fucking mile. The closest behind it is Ghost in the Machine at 3x platinum, but this record is 8x platinum. And there's a documentary that was made within the past couple years. I don't know when it released or if it's even out yet, but it was, so these guys recorded at that studio that I talked about. It was called the Air Studios. Yeah. It's in the Caribbean. And you would go there to get away from everybody. There's a pool there. You would record, and tons of people have recorded there. Paul McCartney has recorded there. Dire Straits has recorded there. Tons of like very big famous albums were recorded there. And now it's like run down. I believe it was created below a volcano, which is a very, you know, a white guy had this, how this recording studio created there. But I think that the volcano erupted at one point or something happened and they left the place and they never went back, and it's all run down and everything, but it's very interesting piece of history. This was recorded there. I don't know. One of the things is that people, for me, the Police is going to always be following a stigma of in 1983 or 1981, whatever, they were the biggest band in the world. So when I put on a record by them, it better be orgasmic to my ears beginning to end. Otherwise, I don't know why this band would be the biggest band in the world. There are great songs on here. The first song, Synchronicity 1, I think it's an absolute banger that starts this album off. It's fast, it's groovy, it's like perfect to start it. The problem is I don't like Sting's voice during most of the verses on this album. Yeah. And like, he kills a bunch of the choruses. Like his chorus singing in Synchronicity is fucking awesome. His chorus singing in, what's the other, let's see here. Oh my God. The third song again, like he kills it in the chorus. The problem with that is now I have to sit through a verse I don't give two shits about to get to the chorus that I want to hear. And so like, he does have a good voice, but he has two specific, like I posted in the chat, does anyone actually think Sting has a good voice? And it's not that he doesn't, cause like he kills it in bridges and choruses, but he will sing with a different style in the verse and I can't stand it. And it bores me to tears. And it's not that the verse is boring, because the music is awesome. Like go listen to the verse music in Synchronicity. It's straight up Sting singing that is like taking me out of it, where it's like, I don't want to hear it. Get another person to fucking sing on the verses. Anyway, that song, again, it's upbeat. It starts this album off with a bang. It goes right into a song called Walking in Your Footsteps that is like crashing into a fucking brick wall at 200 miles an hour. If you need a song to fall asleep to tonight, put that on. You'll be knocked out in seconds. Synchronicity 2, another one of the better songs in the album. So Every Breath You Take is a song Rob brought up. I don't know if you were, when you were saying that it was sampled by someone, if you're talking about the Puff Daddy song from like the late 90s that we listened to when we did the Biggie song. So yeah, I'll Be Missing You by Puff Daddy and Faith Evans.
Okay.
They say samples the song. It doesn't really sample the song. It just uses the song, awesome. Which is still good. Like it's a great song. We've talked about it when we were doing Biggie, I believe it's a good song. So it did get a resurgence in the 90s. The song has grown on me a lot. I think it works because they were going for this less is more thing. And I think it does work. It's slow, but I like it. Becca says it's the most boring of their big singles. So they had Roxanne, Message in a Bottle, Did Do Do Do, Did Da Da Da. They had that song. They had Don't Stand So Close to Me. Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic. Becca says Every Breath You Take is the most boring. I like it. I've come around to it. I think it's a good song. But yeah, I don't like, there's a song on this album called Mother. I don't want to talk about it too long. Cause okay. We've called songs fever dreams before. This song is, if a fever dream song was like, hey, I've made a fever dream song. This song is like, Hold My Beer. And when I hear it, there are people, okay, I don't know when the internet starts trolling, right? I can't really read people. And plus it's hard to read, people typing out comments. There are people who say that Mother is the best song by the Police. And even though I want to think that they're trolling, I don't think that they are. And I don't really know how to respond to a comment like that. There's a shitty song by the Beatles called Revolution Number 9. And if you looked that song up and look at the comments, people have been like huffing so much copium that they're like, oh my God, this song is a masterpiece. It's the biggest pile of shit you've ever fucking heard. I'm pretty sure the band even considers it a pile of shit. It's not like an actual song. It's like a fever dream thing that they created on, I don't know, one of the records. I don't know which one it's on. I don't really care either. But anyway, that song is one of those like trash things that people have just like huffed the copium to where they're like, oh God, this song is it. Like once you transcend while listening to this, you understand whatever, what it is to live and die. The song Mother, when I hear this shit, it's like, if these guys already hate each other, I can't imagine Sting listening to this shit being recorded and not punching a hole through the fucking wall. Joma, what do you think of this album?
I got a booner.
It gave me the exact opposite. I don't have much to say, bro. It's this 80s era of music. Like, it's just a violation of everything that I fucking listen to. I don't know how people think like Sting is actually a good singer. He fucking sucks all the way around. Like,
not even just verses, choruses, bridges, everything.
Yeah, everything, the whole fucking shebang, man. And the band, like, they sound like a high school, like, computer teacher jamming out in his garage alone while his wife beats on him. That's what they fucking sound like.
And while his wife gets gangbanged.
Oh yeah, she's getting like fucking stuffed out, man. Like, she's airtight. It's pretty bad. Like, that's what's happening. Yo,
it's not just that. It's that people are knocking on the door and he has to answer it and point them to where the gangbang is.
And it looks like the dude from fucking what's that goddamn movie? Oh my God, Old School, where he's like, "I'm here for the gangbang."
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's like, up and to the left. And like, he has to go in the garage and cry himself to sleep. It's like, bro, you're a fucking weirdo. And to me, bro, like, this there's too much jazz on this record. And Oh My God sounds like someone is like sniffing keys in the bathroom at Dorsio's. And if you get that reference, then you're a friend of mine. The 80s gave birth to like this new wave of like questionable music, and it comes from the Police and none of it from Rush at all whatsoever, except for Power Windows. Power Windows was a questionable record for me. We could talk about Power Windows another time. Every Breath You Take is a song Jeffrey Epstein plays on the island as kids run away with him, and they're just like trying to get away from him. He's playing that goddamn song, and then Sting is like, generating revenue streams, baby. That's all I need. 2 for 10 for the week. Sting sucks. Hope he stops making music.
Is it because of the watching you part, or why is it played on Epstein Island?
Because it's creepy. It's a creepy fucking song.
That's why. I don't. I think a lot of the love for this album is because it came out when people were young, and this is what was released. I don't know. There are times where I like to shit on people when they have that mentality where it's like, oh, I listened to something when I was young and it's my favorite thing ever. But then I think about how like I've jerked off to Guns N' Roses for the majority of my life. So I am that person, just not as corny, but maybe twice as corny. I don't know. There are songs on here. Like when I listen to the song, like Miss Gradenko, that song I know is credited to Stuart Copeland, and so people are like, oh yeah, he mixes African rhythms. there's like a whole write-up. Okay, I don't care what happens in the song. I want to know who actually considers that song great. I really do. Average at best. I was cooking breakfast earlier, I had this playing. I would say mid, but Becca says mid is like what do you call it, like
average.
Yeah, no, it is average, but it's like what do you call it? It's like a hipster word to say. So yeah, it's average. Anyway, whatever. People love this record, whether they should or shouldn't. It doesn't really matter. It's the highest selling album for the Police. It doesn't matter what we say. People are going to jerk off to this record for 200 years. All right, let's read a couple YouTube comments. First, Every Breath You Take was the summer of 83. That's what I'm saying. This shit's being pumped all through the 80s. People love it. Next one of the masterpieces of the 1980s. Next one says, spiritually uplifting. Next comment, between Stuart Copeland and Neil Peart, their technical prowess is unmatched. And lastly,
fuck no.
Nice. And lastly, why can't they make music as good as this anymore? This generation is missing out so much. I hate that fucking comment when people say like, oh, music nowadays is trash. If you think that, fuck you. Okay. What do you guys, anything else anyone people want to say about the Police? Okay.
No. Fight for my life.
I have a black metal episode planned.
Perfect. Ooh, perfect.
Black metal.
John, well, you gotta do it one more time.
I'm fighting for my life.
That's staying in that's a Hall of Fame soundboard. We're not getting rid of that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All
right. Well, take care. Enjoy your week.
Take care.